a number of important words which have become extremely elastic in their meaning through usage and have even completely lost meaning in some cases. The word God is an example. It can mean many different things. Meditation is another word which now has come to mean profound things as well as weird practices. We must first of all consider what we mean by meditation. Not just how to meditate. One cannot adopt means towards something about which we have no idea at all. To construct a boat, take all the trouble of obtaining the material and working at it in order to climb a mountain would be absurd. It is necessary to know first whether you want to climb a mountain or to cross the sea before you find the means of doing it. If you want to cross the sea, surely you do not equip yourself with a pickaxe and ropes. So we must first try to understand what meditation implies, and then only is it possible to know how to go about it. In the course of evolution, not only are forms developed and perfected, but consciousness, which is embodied in living forms, gradually unfolds itself. And thereby it unfolds all the powers inherent in itself. We will go into it a little later. In various ancient traditions, what some of us call the wisdom tradition, it is said that there is no form which does not embody life or consciousness. What appears as matter is not bereft of consciousness, but the consciousness within is so hidden, dormant, that we do not perceive it. In the rudimentary forms of life, perhaps in a unicellular organism, the consciousness is also functioning in a rudimentary way. That embodiment of life is only vaguely conscious. There is a dim awareness, but it is conscious, it is living, moving. It is not possible now to go into the difference between life and consciousness. But let us think of improved, more evolved forms of life. In the vegetable kingdom, there is consciousness. It has been proved in the last few years very clearly that plants respond to feelings around them. Decades ago, an Indian scientist, Bose, discovered this fact. But plants do not have that type of consciousness which is to be found in various animals. The elephant, the dog, the monkey, these are all creatures which are much more conscious. Consciousness is more developed in them. And when we come to human beings, of course the powers of consciousness reveal themselves to a larger extent than in other kingdoms of nature. This movement of evolution, which is the development of the organism, which implies that the organism becomes more perfectly capable of being a channel for the life force, and which also implies the unfoldment of the consciousness of which is contained in that organism, is depicted by a symbol which was widely used in India and elsewhere, as in Egypt. That symbol is the lotus. It takes its birth in muddy ground, which is thick, perhaps impenetrable, rises above into opaqueness, the opaqueness of water mixed with that mud, rises still further into clear water and reaches the pure air of the sky. It symbolizes how consciousness unfolds, opens out through from the lowest forms which do not allow it to reveal its powers very much, through higher forms which allow the channeling of its powers in greater and greater measure. As the lotus rises into the air, You find it first as a little bud enclosed upon itself, and then it blossoms into a beautiful flower, considered by some to be one of the most beautiful flowers you can find. It receives the light of the sun, opens itself to the width of the skies, and sheds its perfume upon all around. The human consciousness, as it exists in the average person, may be compared to the lotus bud. It has yet to flower and reveal all the beauty, the fragrance, which are inherent within. To learn to awaken the consciousness into its full potentiality, in a state of awareness, is, I think, meditation. The very word conscious means to be aware. There cannot be consciousness which does not have the power of being conscious, of being aware. We are all conscious individuals, but if we watch ourselves, we find that our conscious power of being conscious is very limited. We are not really as conscious as we may think that we are. Consciousness functions in many different ways. Through the senses, when we observe, see, listen, feel, it is consciousness which is becoming aware through that modality. When we feel sympathy, or when we think about something, that is also a way of being conscious. So there are many modes of conscious, of being conscious. But let us try to find out how we are conscious. We may look at a beautiful mountain range. Let us think of a person who does so. He may be conscious only of a great mass in front of him if he is an insensitive person, which is tantamount to saying that his consciousness is not very conscious. Therefore, it takes in nothing more than the physical existence, the mass of matter which is in front of him. If he is, there are such human beings, and we too may become like that if we are in front of a mountain too long. You know, when we go on looking at a thing, we become insensitive to it. We forget that there is a wonderful mountain range in front of us and become absorbed in our own petty little preoccupations. So we could at times be aware of the physical mass only, but at other times be sensitive to something else, that is the majesty, the dignity, the beauty of that mountain range. When the consciousness is aware not only of the physical appearance, but of these intangible things, the qualities which pertain to the mountain, then it's aware of something more. The consciousness is more conscious than it was when it was aware only of the material existence. Now, let us think of another example, a flower. It has its form. A person who is very commercially minded, let us say, may think of the flower, a beautiful orchid, as something which fetches money and nothing more. He perhaps does not see it as anything else than a sort of coin with monetary value. Or if he observes a little more, he notices its various qualities, the way in which it is shaped, the design of the petals, the texture, the delicacy of the coloring, and so on. But even though he notices the qualities of the flower, he may still not be aware of something more, which is perhaps the essence of that flower, its own nature, something hidden within. It was, I think, the German poet Goethe who said that to see beauty is to go below the surface of things and to become aware of the essential nature. If one is aware of the hidden nature, of a hidden truth within, then beauty is realized in the consciousness. Keats said, "Truth is beauty, beauty is truth." To see beauty is to see a hidden reality within, which has nothing to do with the outer qualities and characteristics, but with an imperceptible truth within. Because the outer form may be beautiful to one person, but may not appear so to another. And it may, whether the form is considered beautiful or not, a person who loves sees the hidden truth within. A mother may see the hidden beauty or the hidden truth in a child which others consider not so beautiful. And such a hidden truth exists everywhere, for one of the inherent values which lies in consciousness, in the life which exists everywhere in the universe, is beauty. So, the consciousness which we all possess may be more or less sensitive. Seeing only the outer form, or seeing that form as well as all the qualities which are there, or seeing more than that into the very heart of things, and if it is able to penetrate into the heart, it may be more or less deeply. And to see deeply is to see the significance, the meaning, the value, and to awaken not only to the value of particularities, but to awaken to the value, the significance of all of life is to reach a state of wisdom. When the hidden meaning, truth or value, whatever word one likes to use, is perceived, then all of life becomes different. Our relationship and our actions become different. And to see and to act rightly, lovingly, harmoniously is wisdom. If a person sees only the outer form of a flower, to him it is only of monetary value. He can crush it and throw it away the moment it ceases not to be of personal value. But if he sees the beauty of it, the significance of that inner thing which is the flower, he cannot do it. He would treat it with love, care, delicacy. And that is true of life. A person who sees the significance of life cannot act in a destructive manner. He spontaneously acts in a creative, constructive manner, which is to act wisely. So, when there is a complete awakening of consciousness, when it has unfolded its total power of awareness, out of it comes a holy way of life, a loving way of life. And to reach that state of wisdom is to find the way to reach that is meditation. That is, to learn to awaken one's power of awareness, of consciousness, so that it is not seeing only the outer things, but can also be sensitive to inner things. It's not aware only of what is material, but it becomes conscious of what is non-material. It is aware not only of what is gross, but of what is subtle and invisible, so that it is totally aware. That is the whole process of meditation. Then, what becomes the basis of meditation? what helps one in meditation is whatever helps the consciousness to become more deeply aware, become much more sensitive than it is, not responding only to outer material gross things, but to inner subtle spiritual things. If we understand that, then we can see what it is that can be the basis of meditation. Obviously, there has to be a certain way of living. As we said, a person who is aware of significance cannot destroy. If you are aware of the significance of someone with whom you are, you cannot act in destructive ways in respect of that person. If you are aware of the significance of life, your whole way of life becomes creative and not destructive. And therefore, one starts the meditative way of life by observing one's mode of functioning in life. Sensitivity of consciousness cannot arise when there are various factors in the mind which are destructive of that sensitivity. There are things which obscure the perception in our own mind. Consciousness, as we said, is to be aware. But when there are certain passions, certain kinds of thoughts in the mind, then awareness is destroyed. One cannot see rightly. A person who is jealous, for example, cannot see because of that jealousy. It acts as a screen. You all know the story of Othello. Othello saw everything through the veil of his jealousy. Innocent actions appeared to him to be guilty ones. Everything that his wife said or did seemed to him to contain something evil. But he was not seeing facts as they were. He was seeing everything through his own jealousy. Whether it is jealousy, the love of power, anger, envy, or similar things, whatever it is the consciousness loses its capacity to be truly conscious. It thinks it is seeing, but it is seeing wrongly. It does not see facts. Therefore, one has to learn to live in the right way. When there is to wipe away through observation and understanding all those tendencies which distort the mind. And those are the egotistical tendencies of the mind. Everything which savors of egoism is destructive of the powers of consciousness. Therefore, in the ancient yoga tradition, they said that the basis of meditation is an ethical way of living. If there is violence, aggression, which they called himsa, within oneself, that aggressive tendency acts as a barrier to perception. So one has to be vigilant in life, if one is really interested in unfolding the power of consciousness or of awareness in oneself, and be prepared for meditation in a deeper sense. Without laying a foundation, a structure cannot be constructed. In the present day world, everyone wants a shortcut to everything. And people speak about instant achievement of various kinds. But that kind of instant achievement is not possible. There are so-called gurus who say that you can live whatever kind of life you want, a life of indulgence, a life of self-interest, seek power, pleasure, and all that you are accustomed to seeking, and you will also get enlightenment. But a little use of reason can show that it is not possible. Enlightenment means to be able to see, and one cannot see even ordinary, physical, mundane things rightly, as was the case with Othello, if one does not learn to live in the right kind of way. One does not learn a righteous way of life, if one might use that word righteous. Then there is the question of finding out what it is which makes us more aware. Can we, as we said, when we observe, when we see, when we listen, it is consciousness which is seeing. But we see very little in life. Not only do we not see, when we look at a flower, what it is really is the inwardness of the flower. But we also do not see what is happening within us. We do not notice whether we notice or not. We do not observe what is our own reaction to various things which are happening. We live in a state of unawareness most of the time. So, to develop the power of awareness means to learn to observe. To learn to observe not only what is outside, carefully, sensitively, give oneself the time, the silence, the quietness necessary, but also to observe what is happening to oneself. But this is what very few human beings like to do. If something happens within, there is a movement of anger, then immediately the person either covers it up or escapes from it. He covers it up by saying, it is not happening. It is not due to my fault. It is the other person who has made me do it. So he refuses to look at the fact that the anger has risen inside him. It may not be anger. It may be something else. It may be the love of power. It may be something very subtle. There is the desire for importance in every person. The desire may sometimes be obvious. A person struts about, publicizes himself. Or the sense of importance may be unarticulated, only kept hidden within. The person may have that feeling, but he may not know it himself. We all feel offended because our sense of importance is offended by what somebody else says or does. So various feelings arise, either at the articulated level or at a concealed and subtle level, unacknowledged to everyone and even to oneself. But if one learns to observe, one becomes more and more aware not only of the subtleties outside, the glory of the sunset, of the color upon the leaves, on the water and all that, but of what is happening within oneself in relation to everything else. One becomes aware of all the movements of the mind, of the emotions. And every time one is observing carefully, it gives more sensitivity to the consciousness. So it becomes more and more capable of being conscious or of being aware. We rarely listen to others. While another person is talking, we are thinking already of what we want to say. It is so very common a thing. When there is perhaps even music, the mind may be carrying on its own chatter at the same time. But one has to learn to listen. The more deeply one can listen, the more the consciousness becomes aware. One has to listen to sounds, to the subtlety, to the nuances of sound, but also to the silence, to things which are not said. An angry man whom you encounter may say harsh words to you. You may listen to that, but perhaps what he is really saying is that he is lonely, unhappy, frustrated. If one does not listen carefully, sensitively, one listens only to the harsh words, but not to what he is really saying, to his pain, to what he is. So in life one has to listen not only to what is spoken, but what is not said, to silence as well as to sound. So by carefully watching, by listening, the power of consciousness becomes much greater. The consciousness begins to flower, to blossom out, which means it becomes more open to what life is telling, and sensitive in its apprehension of what exists. And that sensitivity is necessary to go to what lies deep down, which is the significance or the hidden truth of things. And that significance, as we said, is in all of life, in every atom of matter, in the blade of grass as well as in the human being, in those whom we consider ugly as well as those who appear to be charming and lovable. It is our eyes which fail to perceive what actually exists. In the Upanishads, which are some of the most ancient philosophical and religious treatises of India, there is a passage in which the question is asked, where can I find the ultimate reality, the essence of things, which was known as the Atman. And the sage replies and says that it is everywhere. If you love your wife, you love her because you think she is my wife. But the sage says that the wife is not to be loved because she is your wife, but because she is that hidden reality which is the Atman. The husband is not dear because he is your husband, but because what he is himself. And so with the friend, the child, the acquaintance, with the so-called enemy, each one has in fact that intrinsic value which makes him or her or it dear to the person who has the power to see, because the truth is the beauty, the goodness is in all things. And we have to learn to see it in all things. And that can be done only if we increase our own power to see. It cannot come from outside. No guru can give it. There are some who pretend that they can give it. They say you can live in any way you like, but I will give you the power to see God or the transcendental reality or whatever it is. But one can only see what one's consciousness is capable of seeing. So unless one does the hard work of living a daily life in which the power of observation, of seeing, of sensitivity, of response, of openness is not increasing, one cannot see the truth which one may call God or Brahman or whatever one likes. And in this passage of the Upanishad, it says that if you want to see that reality, that truth, that ultimate significance, then learn to observe, to see, to ponder, and then you can meditate. So one has to learn to ponder. Most of our lives are spent on trivialities. Let us watch ourselves. How many hours of the day and the night, if it comes to that, because our dreams merely repeat in an incoherent way the thoughts of the day. How many hours do we spend with ourselves? What I want to do, what my neighbor said, what the next shopping is, who quarreled with whom, the latest gossip which is related in the newspaper. Absolute triviality is what we are occupied with. Each one of us lives in a tiny little circle of interests, and he becomes a captive within those interests. He identifies himself with those interests, whether they are of his family, his religious community, his nation, or whatever it is. He is a prisoner in the circle of his own thoughts and attachments. And he has to liberate himself from that little prison which he has created and learn to ponder over questions which are of deeper import, questions of more universal application. Mr. J. Krishnamurti, who has some of the most significant things to say in the present day about meditation, says, wander near the seashore and learn to let the meditative quality come into your life. Or walk upon the hills and let them tell you of the pain and joy of life, and through that awaken to your own sorrow and the ending of it. I'm not quoting his exact words, but something like that. And it points to the fact that there is a great deal of universal importance which one has to ponder over. The question of sorrow or of joy is there. Our pains and pleasures are two sides of the same coin. We think we enjoy pleasure, but that pleasure ends very quickly. Death may seize someone. The person to whom we are attached may not return that affection. Disease afflicts somebody. There are innumerable ways in which the pleasures people seek end in something other than pleasure. What is the meaning of it all? What is it? What is the I which is continually seeking pleasure and trying to avoid pain? Is that self something which exists for one lifetime only? There are so many questions which are in life, which life is demanding that we should answer. And not answer only in terms of the words of somebody else, not what scripture says, what Jesus Christ or Shankaracharya has said, because those are only words, but answer by so pondering, so assimilating, so deeply relating it to our own lives, to daily life, that we begin to find out what it really means for ourselves. So that thoughtfulness, that meditativeness, the capacity to ponder about truths which are of universal significance, to question and inquire into problems which apply to all human beings, in fact to all life, is part of the meditative practice. And by doing so, the mind opens up, the consciousness widens its scope, it breaks down, it passes beyond its limited horizons, it breaks down the boundaries which it has created for itself. And it is, if we lay that foundation and help the mind to awaken, to become more thoughtful, more observant, more sensitive, listening, watching, thinking, then there is a quality of the mind which can go into depths. And when one goes into the depth of one's own consciousness, one is capable of perceiving the depth in all of life. As we said earlier, we can see only what we are capable of seeing. If we live in superficialities, we can see only superficial things. If we deepen our own perception, our awareness, we come to the deeper inwardness of things, the more hidden truths, the subtler aspects of life. There is an endless depth in life. Its meaning has no boundaries, and therefore one can reach all that which is the end of, if there is an end at all, of meditation. It is the state of wisdom, as we said. In Buddhist thought, they say that to the path there are three aspects. One is the right conduct, which was called Shila, the righteous way of living, which we spoke about, so that all the factors of obscuration, the passions, the thoughts, which prevent one from seeing, like jealousy, anger, etc., come to an end. The other aspect of the path is what we have spoken about, laying the foundation, helping the consciousness through our own effort, if we call it, to awaken through a life which is observant, sensitive, where there is listening, where there is reflection, and then through it comes a state of wisdom. So these are the three aspects of the path that the Buddhists speak about. The end of it is the state of the Buddha. Buddha really means, in Sanskrit, the awakened one. Buddha is to wake up. We live as in a dream. We think we are awake. The person who actually is sleeping is not aware of what is around him. The room, the chairs, etc. Therefore, we call it waking, sleeping. But what we call waking is to be aware of the things. But as we said, we are aware only minimally, in a very limited way. There is a vast world of which we have yet to become aware. And in terms of that, we are still asleep because we do not see that which is subtle, spiritual, and significant. And through meditation, one comes to become aware of that which is supremely significant and which embraces all of life. But it is necessary to lay the foundations to find enlightenment or wisdom, and not think that we can jump from here to there without doing any work.